I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Jonathan Ornstein, the executive director of the Jewish Community Center at Krakow, Poland, and a winner of the Kohan Foundation Award being presented this week. We'll also have a visit from our two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our Mevina on Israel, Oshrat Barel. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. It is remarkably hard to believe that it's now January in the year 2015, a brand spanking new secular year having arrived while we weren't paying much attention. All those darn trite stereotypes of time going faster and faster as we age are actually true, and it's a little hard to fathom. I can't possibly be getting any older now, can I? Well, it's a new secular year, always an exciting time here at Two Jewish. Frankly, we'll use any excuse to celebrate pretty much any holiday, Jewish or otherwise, but we're now entering the holiday-free period of early January, and we're thus forced to actually think and talk about non-festival-related matters. Fortunately, I know this will shock you, I still have a few things to talk about. But first, since we are very early in the new American year, 2015, it's appropriate, at the beginning of all new things, even secular things, to offer in Judaism a blessing. As you probably know, for Jews, there is a blessing for everything. This is a Shehecheyanu, a prayer for new beginnings, as sung by cantor Yitzchak Meir Helfgott, along with a group of popular Israeli singers, blasting through a version of Meyer Machtenberg's setting of the blessing for all good new things. Thank you, God, for giving us life, sustaining us, and bringing us to this new year. Was, among others, cantor Yitzchak Meir Helfgott singing the Shehecheyanu for this new 2015 year. You know, for many Americans, this beginning period of a new year is a time when we try to fulfill New Year's resolutions. Mostly, these focus on losing a few pounds, getting in better shape, or paying off all the many bills we amassed, buying holiday presents for one another. But perhaps this year we can focus on something more important. You know, it's now been almost exactly 4 years since our good friend Gabby Giffords was shot at that Safeway here in Tucson, Arizona, where I live. And somehow the civility and nonviolence and respect that we hoped that awful event would catalyze simply haven't materialized in America just yet. Instead, we've been shocked and horrified again and again by senseless acts of terrible gun violence that murdered good, normal people going about ordinary lives. In the 4 years since Christina Taylor Green, Gabe Zimmerman, Judge John Roll, Dorwin Stoddard, Dot Morris, and Phyllis Schenck were murdered, and Congresswoman Gabby Giffords and Ron Barber and 12 others were shot, with all of the high-sounding words and noble sentiments and courageous bills that were introduced, collectively, as a society, we have failed to do anything about the prevalence of semi-automatic guns, large ammunition magazines, and mentally ill people with access to both. Nor have we noticed any large outbreak of civility in our society. In the 48 months since the Tucson shooting, we have instead seen an unending series of shocking shootings all across our country, the most horrifying of which was the Sandy Hook Elementary School massacre in Newtown, Connecticut, in December of 2012, now 2 years ago and somehow simply gone from our national consciousness. But the records show that every single month when school has been in session since January 8, 2011, there has been a school shooting, or a number of them, on elementary school, middle school, high school, and college campuses all across America. It's worth noting that all of these, and many others, were perpetrated with guns. The worst of these, the genuine massacres with multiple victims, were the result of mentally ill or emotionally distraught shooters using semi-automatic weapons capable of firing from 30 to 50 bullets without reloading. Each time, with each outrage, the public mood gets dark, becomes very committed to changing the climate that allows for such free circulation of rapid-fire, large-supply lethal weapons that are then used to murder innocent people, including, maybe especially, teens and children. And each time our leaders and the general public agitate to do something about our broken mental health system. And after all is said and done, a great deal more is said than done. The strangest aspect of these horrifying shootings, almost always perpetrated by a mentally ill young man or men using weapons he acquired legally under our preposterously lax laws, is that they come at a time when violent crime in America has been on a long, steady decline for decades. That's right. Violent crime rates today are about half of what they were 20 years ago, back in 1993, and that's true for homicides as well as other violent acts. And while the state of Texas is now contemplating the so-called open carry law, that is, citizens will be free to carry guns on the outside of their clothing, you know, like in the Wild West, and Texas believes that this will be a disincentive for violent crime, the truth is that the murder rates in Dallas and Houston are now double that of New York City. Guns in the hands of more citizens don't prevent violent crime in the aggregate, and they aren't needed to stem some violent crime epidemic since there isn't one. And in fact, violent crime is ebbing in America. Except for these stunningly horrible acts of public murder we seem to allow freely. There are solutions available to stop these public attacks, like the one here in Tucson, like the one in Newtown. Yet, we never seem to manage to make them happen. While progress on background checks for gun purchasers appears as distant as ever, one might hope for movement, at least on providing improved mental health evaluation and availability of care. However, the movement here appears to be mostly in the wrong direction now, with fewer and fewer resources allocated to those in need of support and care, and health insurance companies lowering reimbursements to mental health providers. You know, I don't mean to sound too pessimistic about all of this, but I genuinely believe it's time we came to a collective realization that we must truly value human life. We must acknowledge that everyone is created B'Tselem Elohim in the image of God, and we must respect the Ten Commandments, which insist that murder is a complete violation of God's trust in us. To protect ourselves and to allow our society to prevent these desecrations, like the January 8, 2011 massacre here in Tucson, like the horror of Newtown, Connecticut, like the many, many school shootings, We must devote resources to mental health care and start checking the backgrounds of everyone who buys a gun, even when they do it at a gun show. In this new year, perhaps we can summon the collective will to make something happen here and to make all of our lives safer and holier so that this truly will be a good new year of 2015. You know, ever since the fall of the Soviet Union, Jewish life has been developing and growing in Eastern Europe, with new institutions and Jewish centers serving as catalysts for that development. In Krakow, Poland, that change was influenced by an important donation, well, more than a donation, by Prince Charles of England, of all people. Find out how that happened from one of the 2014 winners of the Kohan Memorial Foundation Award, Krakow Jewish Community Center leader, executive director, and founder Jonathan Ornstein, when we return here on Too Jewish.
My name is John Ben Asher, and I'm the head of school at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Tucson Hebrew Academy is a pluralistic kindergarten through 8th grade Jewish day school. We foster educational excellence through an interdisciplinary, integrated general studies and Judaic curriculum. We teach our students to apply Jewish values and learning to everyday life, enabling them to make their community and the world a better place. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supportive learning environment. From the early years through comprehensive high school prep, children thrive in THA's uniquely enriching educational community and culture. Our 41-year tradition of excellence continues to produce highly skilled, critical, and creative thinking students with a strong moral compass and deep understanding of Jewish identity, traditions, and values, well prepared for the challenges to come. Tucson Hebrew Academy, thaaz.org, 529-3888.
If you like fun and games, you'll love this. And this. And even this. Casino del Sol Resort offers more fun under the sun with the newest slots, the best entertainment, and world-class golf. If you want fun, hit the at Casino del Sol Resort in Tucson. Take I-10 East to I-19 exit Valencia West or visit CasinoDelSolResort.com.
Well, they're out there having fun in that warm Arizona sun.
Enterprise of the Pasquagaki Tribe.
We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning. Jonathan Ornstein is the executive director of the JCC, the Jewish Community Center of Krakow, Poland. He was named one of two winners of the Rabbi Samuel S. and A. Irma Kohan Memorial Foundation 2014 Kohan Award for the Unity of the Jewish People. And he has done an extraordinary job on an interesting institution in an interesting Jewish country. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Good morning. Thank you for having me, Rabbi Kohan.
Delighted to have you. Jonathan, tell us a little bit about how the JCC in Krakow came about and what it has to do with Prince Charles.
So we have, I think every good story needs a good creation myth, and our creation myth happens to be true. So in 2002, Prince Charles, the Prince of Wales, was in Krakow on a state visit, and as part of his state visit, he met with some older members of the Jewish community, survivors, and he was very moved by their story of surviving the Holocaust and then the 50 years of communism in Poland, and he wanted to do something to help. And they told him they didn't have a place they could be together like a senior citizens club. So he went back to the UK. He promised he would help them. He went back to the UK, and he got involved with an organization called World Jewish Relief, which used to be called the Central British Fund for German Jewry, and they were the main organizer of the Kinder Transport. And they do a lot of work with the Joint, with the JDC, the sort of big American overseas arm of American Jewry, if you will, philanthropic arm. And they took a look at Krakow, and they realized that it wasn't only this older Jewish community, which sort of what everybody knew about and understood the Polish Jewry to look like, but they understood that there were young people starting to find out about their Jewish roots, and it would be two people would meet, and then three, and then the next week four people in a pub in someone's house. They realized there was something kind of stirring beneath the surface, so they went back to the prince with a counter-proposal, something like instead of just doing a senior citizens club, to do something like a Jewish community center, to sort of be a magnet to help draw the community out that they felt was there. And Prince Charles liked the idea, and he gave some money, and then went to the prince behind your project becomes a lot more viable. And in 2008, they opened the JCC, and Prince Charles and Camilla, the Duchess of Cornwall came for the opening and opened the center and spent the day with us. And for a nice Jewish boy from Queens, it was quite an exciting day to host Prince Charles.
So royalty endowed and helped really create the JCC of Krakow, Poland.
We will talk kind of more broadly, but just briefly, Krakow is a beautiful city, one of the top tourist attractions in all of Eastern Europe. How large is the Jewish community there now?
It's a very good question. So we are still trying to figure that out. Jewish life went almost completely underground during communism. So the people who survived the war and then didn't leave after the war, the ones who stayed at a certain point, it got very difficult to be Jewish during the communist period in 1968, and they really stopped being Jewish outwardly. So people changed their names. People didn't tell their children about being Jewish. So we have a whole generation now that's kind of finding out about their Jewish roots and finding out and then walking in our door and choosing to get involved. So we have at this point 500 Jewish members at the JCC, and that's our best guess of sort of Jewish life today in the city. But if you talk to any of our members and you ask them how many people they know that are Jewish, they'll all say, oh, I know 5, 10, 15 people with Jewish roots, you know, this guy who I used to work with or this guy who lives down the hall and this family that used to be called Schwarzburg, everybody knows, and now they're Kowalski. So it's a question of, as the environment improves here in Poland and it has become an environment conducive to Jewish life, then these people who have Jewish roots are starting to find out about it and, more importantly, act on it. So I think that there are a few thousand Jews in Krakow without question.
We will talk much more with Jonathan Ornstein, one of the winners of the 2014 Kohan Foundation Award for the Unity of the Jewish People from Krakow, Poland, when we return in just a few moments on Too Jewish.
Now I want to express my thanks. As president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, I'm glad and grateful that the modest cash awards we started with some 10 years ago have grown into a rather substantial amount with the help of donors like many of you. The Kohan Foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan and A. Irma Kohan of blessed memory, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the whole Jewish people. That service can be in one of four areas: unity, education and information, creative arts, or rescue. Our past award winners include some truly amazing people, and we are grateful for the chance to reward them and their fine work. Do you know of someone who could qualify for a Kohan Award in 2015? Or will you consider participating in this work yourself? Please go to our website, www.kohanaward.com, KohanAward.com, where you can find all the information on nominating and on participating in this great work. And we'll be glad to hear from you. Our goal is to help people who work for the whole Jewish people.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website or download us at the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts.
We welcome our Mivinan, Israel Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center here in Tucson, Arizona. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
Jews continue to move to Israel from all over the world, usually because they're not so comfortable with where they are right now or feel threatened. The latest migration that they're talking about in Israel is French Jews. You could call Netanya Paris on the Mediterranean, except France has its own Mediterranean. Let's talk about the role of the Jewish Agency in bringing Jews who are endangered, Jewish communities even in total, to Israel.
So actually the Jewish Agency has two roles in terms of bringing Jews to Israel or connecting to Israel. First, for many, many years, it's the doing Aliyah, making Aliyah. So the Jewish Agency has the main role to bring all, Jews from all over, by the way, not just from Europe, all over. And right now, the second role of the Jewish Agency is because not everyone is ready to consider Aliyah. So what the Jewish Agency is doing is working with Jewish community all over the world in terms of first helping the Jews to reconnect to their Jewish identity. In some of the countries, you may know, Jews weren't allowed to practice Judaism.
The former Soviet Union, prominently, parts of South America even, you know, various other places.
So building a leadership, a Jewish leadership first, and then the second phase to create like a connection to Israel, bring them for all kind of short-term programs. And then only at the end, some of them will consider Aliyah, but now they can consider, you know, from both or from Chas v'Chalila emergency, which some of the countries are still emergency Aliyah, but some of them like by choice, like after they reconnect and redesign their Jewish identity and the connection to Israel, they're really making Aliyah from the right and positive reasons, and then they can become like flourish in Israel and not a burden on the Israeli society. So the Jewish Agency actually has two, first to be the first one to help if there is any emergency need to bring Jews to Israel.
In any part of the world.
Yeah. And the second, to work like in North America, Canada, place that Jews has good life.
Australia, for
Australia,
example.
Or that Jews are really have a good life. But also to help them, again, to reconnect to Israel. And not a force, just to open the gate for them. And whomever wants to make Aliyah and become, again, flourish in Israel.
You know, it's extraordinary. The Jewish Agency has been around for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And we're, you know, at there were horrible possibilities of all Jews being massacred in places. Now it's, of course, places where things can be dicey and difficult, and there's anti-Semitism, but also really kind of a new role, and one hopes that that secondary role is more prominent, mm-hmm. although this notion of saving Jews is so central, too.
Yes.
Thank you, Ashrat. We'll talk next week.
Toda Rabbi.
If you're like most people, your biggest purchase is your home. Don't you wish there was someone you could turn to who not only had knowledge and experience, but who truly cared about you? If you're looking to buy or sell a home, you need to know Jill Rich. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. With over 20 years of experience, Jill's one of Tucson's top realtors. She specializes in all kinds of residential property. She can find you a starter house or a castle. Jill will find you the perfect home. While the stock market has wild gyrations, real estate grows in value. If you want to invest in income property, Jill can guide you. And if you're thinking about selling your home, Jill provides a personal marketing program to sell your house fast. You can reach Jill Rich at Realty Executives River Road Office, 615-8400. Jill provides strong representation in a caring way. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. Jill Rich, call 615-8400.
We welcome David and Pam of Freedom Smoke International, new sponsors here on Two Jewish. What is Freedom Smoke International?
Thank you, Rabbi Kohan. Freedom Smoke USA is an electronic cigarette company based right here out of Tucson. We were the first store in the United States, the first store to have all FDA-approved products. It's a healthier alternative to cigarette smoking.
No smoke, no tobacco, and doctors refer people to you.
That's correct. My doctor actually just gave me a glowing report from other patients he's had that I've been able to find this as a healthier alternative to smoking.
Cardiologists, pulmonologists, even dentists, huh?
That's correct. It does help with all that.
How many flavors can people get of this?
We have over 700 flavors available.
Where are the locations and how do people get connected?
Our first location is at River and Orange Grove. We opened one at Broadway and Swan, and we currently just had our grand opening at 12th and Valencia.
And we do have a store in Southern Michigan also.
And what phone number can people call?
You can call the toll-free number at 1-800-705-7013. That's freedomsmokeusa.com.
Thank you, and we'll talk some more next week. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom, and happy secular New Year.
Good morning, Rabbi, and happy New Year to you as well. Thank you.
We have been talking about the Jews of France, the perception that there's a lot of French anti-Semitism, that many French Jews are fleeing to Israel. You find a lot of them in Netanya, by the way, today.
Right.
What has happened? We've heard the history of the Jews of France throughout modernity up until just about now. What's going on now that has changed things
or has it changed things dramatically?
Okay, so the difference, and there is a change, goes back to the 1960s when the French fought a terrible long war in Algeria,
right.
Which they eventually lost, and it was a national trauma. And the result
was sort of the French Vietnam. I mean, that was a perception, which is kind of funny because the French already had a Vietnam.
The
in
French
the
50s. Gave us their real Vietnam, and right. They had a Vietnam closer to home,
right?
Which deeply scarred the national psyche. And there were still so-called, I mean, to use racist terminology, white French people living in Algeria, at least to the end of the 20th century, to some extent even today. And Algeria was the largest and the most traumatic loss of French territory in North Africa. But in the late 50s, they lost Morocco, and they also lost Tunisia. Now, both of those were much more peaceful departures, far fewer lives lost, much less trauma. But the result of the French leaving Morocco, particularly Algeria, and to a lesser extent Tunisia, was that eventually, first of all, a lot of French people who'd been living in those countries returned to European France. But second of all, much later in the 70s, 80s, 90s in particular, people from those former French colonies immigrated to France in significant numbers. They started off being seasonal workers, like farm workers. They helped in the grape harvest. They were necessary. But then they stayed. And so, particularly in the south of France, there are cities where the population is 30 or 40% North Africans.
Marseille,
which means,
for example, but other places
small places, Avignon, yeah. Lots of places.
Right.
And by and large, these people are Arabs and Muslims. They're not Christian Arabs. They're Muslims. They live different lives. The issue of whether head coverings are permitted and what types of head coverings and scarves that cover faces and all that has been a burning issue in French society. Civil rights for North Africans. Increasingly, as their numbers grow, there are those who don't learn French. They speak Arabic, and they live in communities where that's fine, and it's enough to get on with. But the problem is that there's also growing social and economic inequality between white French people and darker-skinned Arabs from North African former colonies of France. And so what happens to great numbers, particularly of younger Algerians, Moroccans, and Tunisians? I guess this will have to be the subject of next week because it looks like we're running out of time.
So we are. We'll continue next week. Thanks, Tom.
Look forward to it.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
Hi, I'm Ben. Attention Arizona taxpayers, you can help provide a Jewish education to families at no cost to you by redirecting your Arizona state tax dollars to JETCO, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization. You can help make Jewish education affordable.
Here's how it works. Arizona lets taxpayers receive a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to JETCO. This lets JETCO give scholarships to kids who attend private schools like Congregation Anshe Israel's Kindergarten and Tucson Hebrew Academy, serving students from K-8. Tax credits are different from a tax deduction or donation. When you give to JETCO, you get 100% tax credit. That means your Arizona state income taxes are reduced by the exact amount you've given. Supporters of JETCO can give up to $1,053 for a single filer or $2,106 for a married couple filing jointly and get that whole amount back from state income tax.
Give JETCO a call at 647-8442. That's 647-8442. Or you can go to JETCO.org.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Hi, I'm a Hasidic Jew with a long black coat, big beard, and the requisite black hat. Was an enthusiastic member of the Bikur Cholim group devoted at his shul to visiting sick members of the congregation. He was out making rounds, visiting housebound patients, when, as luck would have it, he ran out of gas.
Fortunately, a gas station was just a block away. In his long black coat, Chaim walked to the station to borrow a gas can and buy gas. But the attendant had no gas can. Well, since Chaim was on the way to see another patient, he went back to his car to look for something to use to carry gas, and he saw a bedpan he had handy for needy patients. So the chassid carried the bedpan back to the station, filled it with gas, and carefully carried the full bedpan to his car. As the man in the long black coat and the big beard and the yarmulke was pouring gas from the bedpan into his tank, two guys watched him in wonder from across the street. Finally, one turned to the other and said, "If that car starts, I'm converting to Judaism." Yes, that was the Old Jewish Joke of the Week, special feature Two Jewish just for you. You should live and be well, and the car should start. And now a word of Torah. This week we begin reading Exodus, the second book of the Torah, with the great Torah portion of Shmot. I admit to being a bit biased. This was my own bar mitzvah Torah portion, but certainly Shmot is one of the greatest sections of Torah of all. It begins with a kind of coda to Genesis, recounting how the first family of Bereshit, made up of Jacob and his many sons and their descendants, all moved down to Egypt, where Joseph is the ruler of the country under Pharaoh. They settle in Goshen in the north of Egypt and flourish there. And then the fateful events that set the future of our people begin. You might have seen the movie. Joseph and his generation pass away. A new dynasty takes over in Egypt, which doesn't remember Joseph or his contributions. And the Israelites are now viewed differently. As they grow in numbers and wealth, the new pharaoh worries. These immigrants might serve as a fifth column in the event of invasion. They speak a different language. Worship God differently. Their hair is curlier, their noses larger, their skin a little darker, perhaps. They certainly have funny accents. They look like trouble. Isn't it interesting how history is a way of repeating itself? The same negative stereotypes and wicked ways of looking at immigrants recur. And so the Egyptians enslave the Israelites, putting them to work as unpaid slave labor, building store cities, not pyramids, for the royal government. They set up overseers, taskmasters, establish work quotas, push them harder and harder, essentially try to work them to death. But when that fails, those Hebrews are tougher than the Egyptians expect, they decide to simply kill all the male babies, eliminating the whole masculine population in one generation. But the Jews are too crafty for their oppressors. In the tribe of Levi, later to be the priestly tribe, a woman hides her newborn boy baby until his cries are too loud to be stifled. She puts him into a tiny ark, a new Noah, and sets him a sail on the Nile River. And when the Pharaoh's daughter pulls him from the river and names him Moses, a remarkable personal story is truly begun. Shmot tells of the early life and adolescence of Moses, his instinctive outrage at injustice, his hot temper, his exile to the Sinai. It shows him maturing, marrying, fathering children in the desert. And then it takes him through the dramatic narrative of the burning bush, an encounter with a commanding God that will bring him back into the crucible of history, lead him to become the greatest liberator the world has ever known. Finally, it returns Moses to Egypt to meet his brother Aaron and shape his destiny and ours. You know, there's almost too much in this Torah portion to grasp, encapsulating as it does so many of the formative tales of our people's religious history. But most importantly, unlike so many other traditions' hero stories, Exodus does not make Moses into a god, or even into a perfect paragon. He is just a man. A great, flawed man, born into a conflict not of his own making, rising to that greatness only through trial and error, learning both how to follow God and how to lead people towards justice and freedom. It's a great story, of course, but more than that, it's a powerful lesson. Moses became the model for every truly great leader thereafter because of his very humanity, his humanness, his ability to empathize with the suffering of the downtrodden, to utilize the power of righteousness to accomplish everything. May we come to understand that we can accomplish great things too, if we choose, in spite of our many imperfections and limitations, as long as we fight for justice, for truth, and for freedom. When we return in a moment here on To Jewish, our guest, Kohan Memorial Foundation 2014 award winner Jonathan Ornstein, will explore the ways Jewish identity and community life are returning to Poland, in particular to the JCC of Krakow, the most important Jewish institution in Poland today. Find out how when we come back in a few moments on To Jewish.
If you like fun and games, you'll love this. And this. And even this. Casino del Sol Resort offers more fun under the sun with the newest slots, the best entertainment, and world-class golf. If you want fun, hit the at Casino del Sol Resort in Tucson. Take I-10 East to I-19 exit Valencia West or visit CasinoDelSolResort.com.
Well, they're out there having fun in that warm Arizona sun.
Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Two prominent Southern California congregational rabbis passed away at the end of 2014. Conservative Rabbi Harold Schulweis and Reform Rabbi Leonard Bierman. May their memory be a blessing. Schulweis, a past guest of Two Jewish, was the longtime senior rabbi of Valley Beth Shalom in Encino, California, one of the most dynamic and important conservative synagogues in the country. He was a terrific speaker, the author of several books on Jewish theology, the originator of the Chavura movement that did so much to build Jewish community and integrated families of diverse backgrounds into Jewish congregational life. Bierman, the longtime senior rabbi of Leo Beck Temple in West Los Angeles, was known for his liberal political activism on behalf of farm workers against war and in favor of the peace movement in the Middle East. He was an outspoken liberal. Both were outspoken, actually. Talented, courageous rabbis who made a difference in American Judaism in the 20th century. Both will be missed. You know, in L.A., their synagogues are about 10 miles apart, but that could be 45 minutes by car in traffic there. And ideologically, they were separated by some distance, too. But both influenced the course of American synagogues in important different ways that remain important today. In other news, the United Synagogue Youth voted to relax its rules barring teenage board members from dating non-Jews. The amendment was adopted in Atlanta at the annual International Convention of the Conservative Movement's Youth Group. The change affects the 100 or so teen officers who serve on USY's national and 17 regional boards. The thousands of teens who participate in USY programs have not been subject to any such bans in the past. After some debate at the convention, the USY board also elected not to adopt a controversial proposal to alter requirements that teen board members be Sabbath and holiday observant when it comes to travel, public functions, and taking school exams. No word on whether the non-Jewish boyfriends and girlfriends of USYers will be required to become Shomer Shabbos. While the newly adopted USY amendment does not include a ban on interfaith dating, it does state that members should model healthy Jewish dating choices. It goes on to say these include recognizing the importance of dating within the Jewish community, treating each person with a recognition that they were created B'Tselem Elohim in the image of God. This change on dating policy reflects where most young conservative Jews are when it comes to dating outside the faith. Some 4 in 10 conservative Jews who have married since 2000 have married non-Jews, according to the 2013 Pew Research Center survey of U.S. Jewry.
After 400 years of slavery, things here have become much worse. As your brother, you must set them free.
Or not. Several Arab countries banned the release of the film Exodus, Gods and Kings, the number one movie in the world as of last week. Each Arab country had a different explanation. Egypt barred what its culture minister called a Zionist film. It gives a Zionist view of history and contains historical inaccuracies, and that's why we have decided to ban it, said Gaber Asfour. A day earlier, Morocco banned the Ridley Scott movie as it was about to be screened in theaters throughout the country. Morocco banned the film because of scenes that showed God in a corporeal form. The United Arab Emirates also decided to bar the release of the film, claiming inaccuracies in the account of the biblical story. Imagine that, a movie with biblical inaccuracy. This movie is under a review. We found that there are many mistakes, not only about Islam, but other religions too. Juma Obed Alim, the director of the media content tracking at the National Media Council, United Arab Emirates, said, so we will not release it in the UAE. And that's the two Jewish news of Jews around the world. We are delighted to welcome back the Two Jewish this morning. Our guest, Jonathan Ornstein, is the executive director of the JCC of Krakow, Poland. He was named one of two winners of the Rabbi Samuel S. and A. Irma Kohan Foundation, the 2014 Memorial Kohan Award for the Unity of the Jewish People. He's the executive director and founder of this remarkable Jewish community center in Krakow, Poland. Jonathan, as you said earlier in the show, it's kind of a miracle through the intervention of Prince Charles that this JCC began. But how does a nice Jewish boy from Queens end up going back to Poland?
Yeah, well, that's quite a story itself. I was after college, I wasn't sure exactly what I wanted to do, and I went to Israel. I decided to make Aliyah. Served in the army for a couple of years and was living on a kibbutz in the south of Israel near Eilat, a kibbutz called Yotata, and very happy there and thinking I was going to spend my life as a kibbutznik. And then I met a Polish woman, decided to move to Poland and be with her, and came here for that reason. And I lived in Łódź, in Lodz, in the Jewish sense, for a year, and then I got a job teaching in Krakow at the Department of Jewish Studies here, which is also an interesting, it's a separate, I think you might have, that might be a separate program about 100, 200 students who are getting a master's degree, almost all of them non-Jewish, getting a master's degree in Jewish studies. Anyway, I was teaching Hebrew there at the university, and they were opening the JCC, and I applied and became the founding director six years ago.
So Poland, people know, was one of the great Jewish communities in the world. In fact, I think for a while, every prime minister of Israel had been born in Poland for many years. Tell us a little bit about what it's like to live in a country that had a huge Jewish population, most of it destroyed by the Nazis, and what the reality today is for Jews in Poland.
Yeah, I think people very much, you know, when we talk about Poland, we think very much about the past, and unfortunately, people think about the past and think much more of it in terms of the Holocaust, and can sometimes ignore the thousand-year great Jewish history, which you allude to so correctly. You know, at a certain point, you know, the statistics are a lot of fun. You know, half the original members of the first Knesset were native Polish speakers. At a certain point, 75% of all the world's Jews lived here. So there's, of course, this incredible tradition, and the Museum of the History of Polish Jews, Polin, which just opened in Warsaw about a month ago, will go a long way to help people see the entire history. But today, in terms of what it's like living here, of course, it's completely different than it was during before the war, obviously. But it's in terms of numbers, in terms of what's going on. You know, Poland had 3.5 million Jews, which is a huge number. 10% of the country was Jewish. But today the community is small, but it's thriving and it's doing very, very well, and it's going in a good direction, which, you know, I think a lot of your listeners probably know what's going on in Europe and a lot of these places and countries where there's a lot of increasing anti-Semitism, and it's communities don't feel very safe, and Jews don't feel very safe being members of those communities. And we have really the exact opposite situation going on. And every day in Krakow, it's easier, safer, and better to be Jewish. We don't really have the security issues that a lot of other communities face. We have great relations with the government. We have great relations with the Catholic Church. I have good relations. We, as an institution, have good relations with the Muslim community here in Krakow. So things are going in Poland phenomenally well. And I think that there aren't that many good stories in the Jewish world today that we can all rally around. And to me, this revival of the Jewish life in Poland is, you know, really one of the most important stories going on today in the Jewish world.
You know, you alluded to talking about the Jewish studies program there. There has been a tremendous interest in Jewish culture in Eastern Europe in general, but particularly in Poland, among the non-Jews. Can you tell us what the origin of that is? Why has this suddenly become such an interesting? There's huge Jewish festivals, klezmer festivals, almost all of it created by people who aren't Jewish. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's remarkable. It really is. And in terms of what we're doing, we wouldn't be able to do what we're doing if there wasn't this incredible non-Jewish interest and non-Jewish cooperation in terms of building Jewish life. And I think that really started in 1989 after communism ended, and there was this pent-up interest in everything to do with Jewish life and Jewish culture. Think about 1939, the war started in 1939, ended in 1945, and then you had 45 years of communism, and people couldn't really explore what happened to the Jews, and Jewish culture was sort of suppressed. And I think there was this pent-up interest in it, especially among young people who came of age in 1989 or started to come of age after communism ended, and grew up hearing stories from their parents, from their grandparents, of these living in these towns of shtetls of 70-80% Jewish population, and all of that almost completely destroyed, and then silence about it. So I think there was this sort of pent-up interest in Poles today. To be a young Pole, and you want to understand your own history, understand Jewish history. You know, such a big part of the population was Jewish. The middle class was overwhelmingly Jewish. These big cities like Warsaw were one-third Jewish before the war, and then that vanished, and people are interested in that. Poles are interested in that, and they want to understand. I think that it's a desire not only to understand Jewish history or Jewish culture or to immerse themselves in Jewish culture because that's an interesting topic. I think they want to understand what it means to be a Pole, and to understand that, they need to understand the role of the Jews and the contributions to Polish society that the Jews have made for 1,000 years.
You know, some of your events at the JCC, you actually take out into the community. You talk about Purim and taking, big costume marches through the community. Has there been great acceptance of the JCC?
Absolutely. I mean, without question, we feel that, we're the Jewish community center, obviously, but we feel like a community center. So we work very closely with the local non-Jewish community. We have most of what we're doing is open to everybody. We have all our language classes, Hebrew, we have Arabic and Japanese, and that's open for everyone. We have, what's really remarkable when we talk about the non-Jewish interest, is we have 50 non-Jewish volunteers in our JCC. So these are all young people, some of them studying Jewish studies, some of them from a small town that used to be very Jewish for whatever different reasons, and they come here not only to learn about Jewish history and learn about Jewish culture, but to actually help us rebuild the Jewish community. And that's a phenomenal, phenomenal thing to be a part of, and we wouldn't be able to do what we're doing without that.
So in addition to that, people here and many of our listeners are familiar with Jewish community centers in the United States and elsewhere around the world. We kind of know what a JCC is, or we think we know, active in the sports program or the athletics. Maybe we do dance, go to a lecture. What's unique about the Krakow JCC? Is it like every other JCC in the world? What's different?
I think it's a little bit different. So our JCC is really the hub of Jewish life in a city in a way that American JCCs don't need to be. So we have synagogue services going on here. We have conversion classes going on. We have a genealogist to help people find out about their Jewish roots. We do a big Shabbat dinner each week for 60, 70, 80 local people, and those are young people, older people, secular, quite religious, everywhere on the spectrum. So we're really doing everything. We have a Sunday school here. All Jewish education going on in town is going on, most of it here. So we're really kind of the hub of Jewish life and the focus of Jewish life. But I think also, maybe most importantly, is that we're a portal into the Jewish world for people who are just finding out about their Jewish roots. So we have people who walk in, who a week before were rummaging in their grandparents' attic. Someone is maybe a teenager rummaging in their grandparents' attic, who find a photo of someone with a long beard, realize that there were no Amish in Poland back in the day, so something else must be up, and they go to the archives and realize that they're Jewish. And then they walk in, they open our front door, our wide open front door, and they say, hello, what do I do? I just find out I have Jewish roots. So we're a portal into the Jewish world. So we're occupying a lot of roles that maybe an American JCC, because you have more, in some ways, more developed Jewish life in communities. You don't need to be everything. So I think that we're a synagogue, and we have a Jewish life. We're a synagogue, we're a museum, we're a visitor center, and we're a JCC all in one.
If there was one thing that you could change or add to your Jewish community center, what would it be?
We have now a baby nursery that's 2 days a week. Last year it was 1 day a week, and we run out of space in the building, and we need to find space outside the building and have a full-time Jewish baby nursery, which is the start of Jewish education in Krakow, because there is none. So we need to do that, and we talk all about a Jewish future, and things are going well, but we need a way to start educating people and give them formal Jewish education, and then from the baby nursery, we need a kindergarten, and from there, a grade school, and we need to go all the way up the ladder as we start to rebuild the infrastructure that was destroyed. And if we want to have a Jewish future in our city, and then all the elements are here, then we need to be able to educate our young people.
I have a funny question. You mentioned conversion classes. I know there's tremendous interest in Judaism now in Poland. Are those controversial at all?
Well, as you know, Rabbi, conversion is a very complicated issue in the Jewish world everywhere. I don't know if it's if they're necessarily controversial. It's complicated, as you would imagine, here in terms of the Orthodox conversion and Reform and all the different elements and how they play out. And because we're such a small community, we look to guidance from Israel and the Israeli conversion in terms of what's acceptable in the eyes of the Israeli rabbinut is somewhat
controversial in and of itself.
Absolutely. So, but no, I mean, the idea itself that people are converting is not in and of itself a controversial idea. There's no, we don't get any pressure or any blowback from that saying, oh, why are people converting? And what's interesting is I think that most people in the United States, when they convert for marriage. Whereas, I don't know percentage-wise, but my understanding is that's the majority. Whereas here, people generally convert because they have some Jewish roots and they kind of want to make it official. So they have a Jewish grandfather and they want to be fully accepted in the Jewish world, so they go through the conversion process.
The Jewish community of Poland, as you said, it's hard to even know how many Jews there are in Krakow. I'm sure it's not easier to know it in the whole country. Is the Jewish population growing?
It is growing, and it's growing not from immigration, which is a situation like Germany, for example,
right.
From the former Soviet Jews. But no, here the people went underground and are reemerging, and there's a window of opportunity right now that they find out about their Jewish roots through parents, through grandparents, and then they can reconnect. So, I mean, if you think about the numbers, if you started 3.5 million in 1939. And then even, 3.1 million murdered in the Holocaust, and then, afterwards, attrition and emigration. You can't get to these tiny numbers, which the official figures are today. You can't go from 3.5 million to 5,000 in Poland. The Jews are out there somewhere, and we have a positive environment for them getting involved. And if we are able, institutions like ours and other institutions, is the JCC in Warsaw now, which is doing really well, if institutions like ours are able to reach out to these people and provide paths for them into the Jewish world, then a lot of more of them will make that choice and rejoin the Jewish world.
I have friends in Europe. During the recent Gaza war, expressions of anti-Israel sentiment became anti-Semitic sentiment pretty quickly. That must also be a challenge at a place like the JCC in Krakow. Can you talk about that experience? And, having lived in Israel, been in the Israeli army, what does that connection mean to people in Poland?
I think that Poland is a very pro-Israel country, and I think our community is very pro-Israel. A lot of the issues that you mentioned in terms of what happened this summer, how quickly anti-Israeli sentiment turned into anti-Semitic acts or statements didn't really happen here in Poland. I think Poland is generally pretty pro-Israel. The media, the newspapers on a daily basis are not biased against Israel, as a lot of the media in Europe seems to be. Not only Europe, I could say, as a longtime New York Times reader, I was not happy with a lot of things this summer myself.
Right.
But Poland is an outlier in that sense as well. And I remember that I wrote an article about something that the first day when everything started in Gaza this year, there was headlines all over the world, really. If you looked on Google News or something, where it showed all the different headlines from everywhere, and it was Israel bombs Gaza, Israel attacks Gaza, and then in the headline of the main Polish newspaper that day was rockets shot at Tel Aviv. So something, kind of giving a little bit more perspective, or something that maybe is closer to how a lot of us might see that. So very, very interesting. Poland today is, Germany, in a place like Germany, people talk about the government is pro-Israeli because there's a historical need to be that, and a sort of an understanding between the two nations based on the Holocaust. But here, the people themselves are pro-Israel. So we have a Yom HaAtzmaut celebration in our courtyard, waving Israeli flags and singing HaTikvah, and we're right in the middle of the busy place in the city, and people walk by and wave, and the gate is wide open. They come in and say hi, and Chag Sameach. So it's It's pretty remarkable.
It's a lovely contrast. I want to thank Jonathan Ornstein, one of the winners of the 2014 Kohan Memorial Foundation Award, for a great visit here on Too Jewish. People want to find out more about the JCC in Krakow. The website is jcckrakow.org. And we look forward to having you here in Tucson soon. Thank you so much, Jonathan.
Thank you, Rabbi Cohen. Can't wait to see you in Tucson.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical playout.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Cohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 a.m. Our guest will be Rabbi Daniel Freelander, the president of the World Union for Progressive Judaism. Our playout this morning comes from the Sephardim of Toledo, Spain. Eduardo Paniagua and Jorge Rosenblum singing Ki Eshmera Shabbat, Azmira, a song for the table for Sabbath. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week and a week, we pray, of peace.
Ki Eshmera Shabbat, Eli Shumereni, Odile Olmead, Ben.